First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
By the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, where you can go for all the latest, any news stories we're breaking or podcasts of this show, wherever you want to do. We're there. We're live. We're always around. While you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, I would ask that you please join our email newsletter. That way we will deliver all content straight to your inbox on a weekly or a monthly basis, your choice. And if you don't mind, also join the RSS feed, and we can make sure the podcasts of this show get delivered straight to you, as well as reminders when we go live. Additionally, while you're there, if you are so inclined, remember, we depend on your generosity to keep everything going. So if you don't mind, just use that little donate button. We would love to have any help you can give us. I tell you, for those of you who are new to the show, phone numbers, as always, 858-683-1326. Or you can call 502-805-0334 if in the Louisville area. And for everybody else that is in the listening queue, we appreciate you being there as always. But remember to hit that number one on your dial pad so we know you want to be heard on air. And the chat room, as always, is open now while we're live. You can join us there, sign in through BTR, or you can even sign in using Facebook or Twitter accounts. Whatever floats your boat. I tell you... I'm already in the chat room having a conversation with one of our regulars, and it's funny. We'll get into that in a minute, talking about the latest poll coming from Alice in Wonderland Grimes that I find it hilarious. But there's a couple of things we need to get to before we jump on that level. It was very interesting today. I was surfing the net, doing my thing, doing my due diligence, checking out news, and lo and behold, I found this news disgusting. And, of course, it has to be in Michigan. You know, Michigan, the Muslim terrorist home state now, the state that likes to go ahead and go bankrupt in their biggest cities like Detroit because they don't know how to manage their money any better than we do here. But it was interesting because a lieutenant colonel happened to be in uniform, Was walking his daughter to school at Rochester Adams High School in Michigan, and apparently there were guards at the door. Their security personnel told this 24-year veteran Lieutenant Colonel Sherwood Baker that he could not take his daughter inside the building unless he went home and changed clothes. You heard me right. You heard me right. This Lieutenant Colonel, who has honorably served our military for 24 years and counting, did nothing more than want to take his daughter to school and go into school with her. And Rochester Adams High School in Michigan security personnel told him he wasn't allowed to enter in uniform, that he had to go home and change. The guard stopped him, said he wasn't allowed into school, and told him that men and women in uniform were not allowed because it may offend another student. How pathetic can you get right here in America, folks? Right here in America. Our veterans are told that they can't walk onto a public school or walk into a public school building if they're in uniform because they may offend another student. Is this not kowtowing once again to Islam and the Muslims? I mean, think about this. Those were the only ones who would possibly be offended by a military uniform, aren't they? I mean, we live in the United States of America, and this is the way we treat our veterans. These are the guys, and I'm proud to be a veteran myself, but these are the guys who go around and promote freedom and fight for your freedom and your rights and your liberty every single day. And they're being told they can't proudly display that on American soil, the land of the free, home of the brave. Are you kidding me? I saw that story. I got very perturbed, and I wanted to make sure you guys were able to, check this out. Don't just take my word for it. I'm going to put a link in the chat room right now for you to preview. Now, in the school's defense, if there is a defense, the school superintendent, Robert Shaner, who's a military veteran himself, apparently went way out of his way to apologize to the family, said the security personnel, it was misconduct on the part of the security personnel, and he was quite upset by the fact the security personnel did this to Lieutenant Colonel Baker. But, the fact that someone thought that they could do this, it's disturbing in itself to me anyway. I don't know. Y'all have to let you make up your own mind. The link is in the chat room. As we all know now, we're going to get to Louisville for a few minutes, then we'll start getting into some of the other races. But in Louisville, Electrolux is buying Appliance Park from GE. Well, they're buying the appliance business from General Electric for $3.3 billion. 6,000 jobs are right here at Appliance Park here in Louisville. Now all are at risk. Don't believe what they tell you. It's fascinating. This is going to be completed sometime in early 2015. It requires regulatory approval. And Electrolux is basically buying the GE name on the appliances. They will continue making these appliances, and are going to put GE's name on it instead of their own. This is concerning for me in Louisville. This is 6,000 jobs, 3,700 hourly workers. That Greg Fisher, your illustrious mayor, has decided it was okay to get rid of. Now, you're going to hear all the backlash, and you're going to be told I'm just full of garbage and I'm just raising hell for nothing because I don't like the mayor, which is a lie. But you think about this. GE has been a mainstay in Louisville. I don't like the GE Corporation because a GE Corporation are corporate welfare whores, as far as I'm concerned. But there are 6,000 jobs in Louisville, of which 3,700 are hourly employees that depend on GE to provide for their family. And we couldn't do anything to keep them here? Did any of that have to do with the fact that we don't have a quality workforce because Greg Fisher threw the quality workforce initiatives out the window? Did he show favoritism for auto work instead of other manufacturing in Louisville? Those are legitimate questions. They really are. And it's very, very disturbing. So we Electrolux has not went on record to say what they plan on doing, other than the fact they are going to continue using GE's name on these appliances. They are not on record for anything else. However, it is very interesting in itself that Electrolux is going to keep their headquarters in North Carolina. If they're not even willing to move their headquarters here, and the appliance division in Louisville is one of the top ones GE has, then that tells you a lot about the future plans, in my opinion. In most cases, a lot of times what happens here, I say in most cases, and a lot of times contradictory, I know, but in quite a few times here, you know, a lot of times these companies end up moving the locations closer to their corporate headquarters, or they move their corporate headquarters. Electrolux is not committed to do that. They've said that they are going to stay in North Carolina. So that is a disturbing thing we have to watch out for. You know, for the families that are going to be involved in this, trust me, local mainstream media is going to plow the field and give you the bullshit from the administration. They're going to give you the same garbage from Greater Louisville, Inc., the GLI boys, you know, which is, to me, is Government Lying Initiative. That's what GLI stands for. They're bought and paid for by the Louisville government. You know, these guys are going to sit out here and make clowns and stuff like that, too, and act like they really care. and there's a reason I tell you that, because here in Louisville, the next thing going on right now, there now has been an introduction to a measure to raise the minimum wage in Louisville to $10.10 over a three-year period. The interesting thing here is not that they want to try to force this down our throats. The interesting thing for me is the fact that, you know, they don't care what it's going to do to our economy, how many employees it's going to affect, and they don't care about being fair across the board. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have all of these different things going on in Louisville. You know, we've got Jim King, for example, you know, has decided, and we had this from WFPL.org, Jim King decided in an August email exchange that, you know, the wage bill should exempt younger workers. And his comment and email was, many entry-level jobs for untrained high school-age children are used to teach them how to work and seldom deserve a wage above the federal minimum. High school-age children are not raising families and, in many cases, fortunate to get a job. Now, that's a statement, like I said, I took from the WFPL.org article. But let me tell you this. That, to me, is a clear indication, you know, that the Democrats really aren't interested in being fair about anything. This Democratic council and this Democratic mayor in Louisville are only interested in dictating and telling us what they want, and they're going to get what they want. For Jim King to make a statement that these high school-age children are not raising families is a clear indicator of why him and his Metro Council Democrat hack friends ought to leave the Metro Council, period. I'm 50 years old, folks. I don't have to lie about my age. I'm very proud to be 50 years old. But at the age of 12, I went to work illegally then. Couldn't get a work permit until you were 14. I went to work illegally at the age of 12 and worked for cash and anything I could possibly get my hands on doing. I went to work for a car wash for tips. Back then, you had real car washes where people actually washed your cars and dried them and that kind of neat stuff. And I got tips. I worked for tips. Cut grass, whatever it took, shoveled snow. I was constantly working. And that money came home because my father became disabled and could not provide anymore. So that money had a direct effect on my household and my brother's and my father's ability to eat. That's the truth. It's even worse today for most people than it was for me back then. These high school age kids, you know, in many cases are raising families or their money is helping the household. That's just the truth. Now, I am totally against raising minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. I admit that fully. I think it's ridiculous to set a minimum wage above the federal minimum wage laws, primarily because it creates an unfair advantage and destroys business. If we raise minimum wage to $10 to 10 cents an hour right here in Louisville at all these jobs, prices go up because business is going to recover that wage money by higher prices. They're not going to lose profits over this. And since we are in Louisville and since this mayor and his government, you know, lying initiatives that we call GLI, their buddies Kent Euler, you know, these guys all get together and have decided to promote Louisville in this region-centric mindset. And what region-centric really clearly means is this. They're not focused on Louisville business. The government is focused on region business. We want to include southern Indiana and all these other surrounding places to Louisville. If we raise our wages to $10 to 10 cents an hour, and it's only going to take me 5 minutes to go across the bridge to save $5, I'm going across the bridge to southern Indiana. Just like they're doing now, because we are not actively doing anything to help business in Louisville survive or thrive or grow. And that's the disturbing part about minimum wage. Minimum wage was never designed to be a livable income that you could raise a family on, although many of these kids and these young teenagers are taking their money home to help provide for their family, and I applaud them for that. It shows a lot of initiative. But it was never designed to be an end-all, be-all. So for Jim King or this Metro Council to say that we can put all of these different stipulations into place and we can exclude this group of people because they're not old enough to need the money, that to me is the biggest crock I've ever heard. They're just kids. What do they need the money for? These kids are working alongside those adults that are going to get $10 an hour and doing the same job. The Metro Democrats clearly love the unions, right? The unions love the Democrats. They support the Democrats all the time. Go to any union and find out, you know, with the exception of the UAW, I guess, today, because they started this two-tier wage system. But the unions, typically, their mindset is what you pay one, you pay all. Everybody's going to get equal pay for equal work. And the Democrats keep promoting how they love the unions. For me, when I see them actually using this argument, you know, a Jim King argument, that these high school-age children, you know, are in many cases are fortunate to get a job and they don't really need the money because they're not raising families. Doesn't that defeat the union mentality that supports these people? Nobody sees the hypocrisy in that. Nobody sees the hypocrisy. That's one of my big problems. Now, of course, GLI, you know, had said, well, we're going to have to study this. Because, you know, you should deserve a fair reflection of the facts. Now, they announced this Monday that they were going to study the minimum wage issue so that we could have a fair representation of the facts. That's Kent Euler, the new and improved part of the Greater Liars Association or the Greater Liars Incorporated that GLI is. So they have to research it. Now, I don't understand why they haven't taken the leadership on this and represented business any clearer or any fairer or any quicker than this, because this minimum wage issue and this ordinance issue has been around for months and months and months. We knew a couple months ago that the Metro Council Democrats had went to County Attorney Michael Connell to see if they had the authority to try to raise this minimum wage anyway. So why wasn't anybody doing their due diligence research then? Why? Is there a reason? All of these things are disturbing. Well, now, of course, late last night, Courier-Journal reports that, you know, wow, GLI is now going to oppose a minimum wage increase because it's only going to affect Jefferson County, and it's going to potentially cause jobs, and lo and behold, it's going to create a disincentive to hire young people and other first-time job seekers. And I'm laughing at this statement. They brought this statement out after we attacked GLI for not doing their job Monday night. I don't know what to tell you. If these guys are going to continue following the leader and making me their leader because I'm telling them the truth, then guess what? We're going to give them something to follow. In the very near future, we will have a major announcement right here on the radio show, and we will have a major launch of an initiative that I think all business in Louisville is going to appreciate. They already know about it. That's why GLI is getting mentioned in the paper every single day. They hadn't been mentioned in months. Because one, we made sure everybody knew about it. But I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that tonight. But the bottom line is, you know, there's nobody working on behalf of business. This is an argument that should have been presented months ago, you know, by somebody, and nobody was doing it. And you know, I've got to tell you this. I think hell has frozen over today, and here is why. Because of GLI's announcement that they're finally going to take a stand and oppose minimum wage, you know, even though they support higher taxes, they proved that in a local office sales tax. And that's another story we'll get into when I do a press release in the near future. But, you know, GLI is going on board doing this, and hell is frozen over because, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know which way you look at it, I am at a complete crossroads because one of the council people that I really, truly cannot stand, I think they're racist, I think they're divisive, and they happen to be a Democrat, is First District Attica Scott. But Attica Scott is quoted in this Courier-Journal article that says, GLI has proven to be a very conservative entity that has little to no base in Southwest and West Louisville. And she went on to say that I am not sure they have much traction and influence at the council. Hell is frozen over because I actually agree with Attica Scott. GLI has no influence with anybody. The reason the Courier-Journal and everybody else is giving GLI their 15 minutes of fame every single day these days is because Greg Fisher and the Democratic leadership have to prop GLI up. GLI is losing businesses left and right, hand over fist right now. They're so desperate to keep people, they can't even hold a proper meeting because they can only get four or five people to show up. Okay? That's the truth of it. And they want to act like they have some kind of influence on the council. They have influence over Greg Fisher. They have influence over some of the council. All right. But they don't represent two-thirds of Louisville. They do not represent Southwest. They do not represent West Louisville. The only people they focus on is the Democratic elected hack leadership that we have in Louisville. And that is the problem. So it's not just GLI. This is, you know, I'm using GLI because they're the latest and greatest revision. They've been going through a revision for 2 years and still don't know who the hell they are because they sold out. But, you know, when you look at Louisville leadership, when you look at the liberal agenda right here, you look at this minimum wage hike that there's nothing going to be fair about. When you look at all of these different things in play, we're clearly seeing a common thread, destroy Louisville. That's what has happened. That is what's going to continue to happen unless we get involved in the process and force new changes with leadership. There's no other way to do this. I can't stress that enough. This liberal agenda here is destroying us. And I, for one, am quite disturbed by it. I really, really am. I think that we have gotten to the point that people are starting to wake up, that they are starting to realize that people like myself and a whole host of others in this town are not the conspiracy theorists and nut jobs that everybody wants to paint a lot of us at because we hold the mainstream media and the liberal politicians accountable. But when we sit here and we got to continue going down this road, we're losing GE. Greg Fisher knew in November of 2012 we were going to lose GE. Now a lot of people are saying, well, that's a bold statement to make, by God. Do you have any proof? All I can tell you is it's my opinion, and here is why. As everybody knows, we are the only ones who have been following the plight of the workforce training facility that we were supposed to get here in Louisville a couple of years ago. We know that Greg Fisher decided to ditch that whole plan in the West End in favor of taking care of his sweet little sister and putting her in a white bread neighborhood and letting her Catalyst Learning firm get all of this private public dollars to supply workers with a focus on what? Auto manufacturing. This was a sellout to Ford. GE, up until November of 2012, was part of the team that were assembling, that was assembled to bring this workplace training facility to fruition. They were part of that team that was assembled to do just that. In November of 2012, they abruptly backed off and said they no longer wanted to be involved with that project. At that point, folks, that's a telltale sign that something is wrong. At that point, folks, what was going on? Oh, wait, that's right. Lynn Fisher just got the nod to get everything her way and screw the West End community that everybody was involved in. Lynn Fisher and Greg Fisher put together a plan that was going to create this facility to benefit auto manufacturing, not all manufacturing, like the original workplace training facility was. No, in this case, it was auto manufacturing. Well, if I'm a corporate business like GE and I'm an appliance business, like GE, and I need my trained workers to work our robots to do the other stuff like GE, you know, and I need a well-trained, motivated worker. And the mayor of the city just said, hey, guess what? We don't care about you. You're not important enough. We're going to deal with the auto guys. We'll give them everything, which ironically is why Ford is still here in the first place. When you look at this, to me, it's common sense that GE backed out for that reason. It just makes sense. So when you put all this in play with the minimum wage hikes, you know, the workers, what we're basically doing here is we're not worried about giving workers the tools to be a world-class worker, to have skills available to an employer upon hire. No, what we're doing is we're running the jobs out of town that we need that actually pay the money that's above minimum wage, and we're creating a higher-paid, unskilled workforce at the detriment of our entire economy. And we've talked about people who are going to go to southern Indiana for goods, but what about the businesses that are going to move to southern Indiana? Because the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. They're going to take their jobs over to southern Indiana, let southern Indiana once again benefit from this region-centric mindset that this local Louisville leadership continues employing. So they're going to take the jobs. You know, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Every time I think about this, really truthfully, it's almost kind of comical because every time I think about this, I keep coming back to a South Park. And for you guys who want to know that know what South Park is, I want you to hear this for a second because it's the truth. It's exactly what we're going to be doing here in about 2 years.
They took our job. They took our job. They took your job. They took our job. They took your job.
They took your job.
They took your job.
They took your job. They took your job.
They took our job.
They took our job.
They took our job.
You know, that's South Park. And, you know, and that's what we should be doing. We should all be standing together right now down at Metro Hall and screaming at every one of these damn Democrats who are out there screaming for minimum wage, scream at Greg Fisher at GLI for destroying business here, and we should all be out there, all 700,000 of us in the Louisville area, should be standing right out there in a big old pile, going back as deep as we need to, screaming at the top of our lungs, they took our jobs. Paul, you're on the air.
Ed, I think this it's okay that Southern Indiana gets the bulk of the new jobs. I really do. Because the way I look at it is that all the Kentuckians who lose their jobs will be able to cross the new toll bridges and help pay for the new toll bridge with the higher salaries of the good jobs over across in Southern Indiana. So, you know, there's always a bright side to things, Ed. You know?
Well, the problem is there aren't going to be higher-paid jobs over in Southern Indiana. They're just going to take the minimum wage jobs over there and save $3 an hour, so they get to pay the tolls on less pay, really. You know, so I get your point, but and that's the whole thing. We have put such a focus on Southern Indiana, you know, in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. It started with Jerry Averson and this region-centric crap, and it's continued through Greg Fisher. GLI, which started out as a great, and I thought it was a great idea back in 2002, for Greater Louisville, Inc. to get together. They portray themselves as the Louisville's Chamber of Commerce, and that's a lie because they are not. I know this firsthand, and we'll explain why in the very near future. But, you know, we've got all this stuff going on, and everybody's sold out. The only people who have benefited is Southern Indiana. Who's going to benefit from the new bridges? It's not going to be Kentucky. The new bridges that we're spending all this money to build are going to benefit Southern Indiana. So while everybody is thinking region-centric, are we trying to make Louisville a ghost town and then we're going to make it even worse by forcing a wage increase that nobody else has to suffer through?
Well, I heard a story today where the presenter was accused of looking at everything through the spectrum of politics. And I really believe that the point you just made, Ed, has to be looked at through the spectrum of politics. Jefferson County in particular, and Kentucky in general, at the statehouse level, has been dominated for more than 40 years by people who are Democrats and the Democrat philosophy. Southern Indiana and Indianapolis have gone in the opposite direction, and that is they have been dominated by the Republicans and the Republican ideology, okay? So if you take a look at side-by-side comparison between the Democrat religion and the Republican religion using Kentucky and Indiana, Indiana is light years ahead of Kentucky in just about every measure that you can conjure up. So what I don't understand is I don't know what the answer is, and it's a question that you've been asking a lot, and that is, what's it going to take to get the people of Kentucky and the people of Jefferson County in particular to decide that they want the same good life and the same benefits that are being offered right across the Ohio River in southern Indiana?
Well, you know, it's fascinating. I think you just put a good narrative out there, because I tell you, you know, I know many people that have moved from Louisville to southern Indiana, and it was the best move they said that they've ever made in their life. The life is better over there from a financial standpoint. Taxes are lower. They get more stuff given to them. And when you look at that, I can't think of one person that I've talked to in the last 10 or 15 years that said they moved from southern Indiana to Louisville and their life improved. And I think that's a good reflection. And when we look at this minimum wage thing, Paul, and I hate to keep coming back to this because it's the truth, but when we look at this minimum wage thing, for example, not only are we pushing all our businesses and everything else, letting southern Indiana thrive at our expense, we are a river town, the same river town that southern Indiana is, you know, but when you push this minimum wage, how long is it going to be before the rest of the only high-priced jobs we've got, say Ford and other people, decide to leave Louisville as well? Because, you know, if minimum wage is going up $3 an hour, these union contracts are going to make damn sure they're going to get the same $3 an hour in the next time they have union contract negotiations, and I believe that's coming up at Ford next year. You know, when you look at all of this, that's a cost of doing business that none of these liberal Democrats want to think about. It's not just the high school kid that's going from $7.25 to $10.10 an hour. It's also the entire workforce. And when you're competing in a union town that Louisville is against southern Indiana, which is 5 minutes away, all right, who is a right-to-work state, isn't that a big distinctive advantage given to Indiana as well?
Again, the people of southern Indiana in particular and in Indiana in general have actually decided that these are good policies for their well-being on a personal level. And that's why they have incorporated them into their governments all over the state. So let's take the Louisville path to its natural conclusion, Ed, for just a moment. All right?
Okay.
Where Louisville and Jefferson County and Kentucky in general has continued to be dominated by the Democrat religion. Okay? And the Democrat religion is basically a religion of redistribution. Take away, it's kind of a Robin Hood theory, if you will. Take from those who have and redistribute it to those who have not. Well, there's been a number of cities in the United States that have recently had to file bankruptcy because of that very implementation of the Democrat religion. The biggest and most glaring example of that particular situation having happened is Detroit, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit, Michigan, they have for decades been the hub of the Ford Motor Corporation. And when the auto industry scaled back, guess what happened? The people up in Detroit, the politicians, those who had been benefiting from the great economy that Ford brought, they had to find other ways to pay the bills that they had incurred, and these are long-term bills. And, of course, they never, ever, ever, ever thought that the money supply would be diminished. Guess what? It did, and now they had to declare bankruptcy. The legislators down in Frankfort have adopted the same philosophy. The Democrat-controlled Kentucky legislature for years have adopted the same outlook that the money supply will never, never, never dry up. And now one of the biggest long-term indebtedness problems that this state faces, and I hesitate, excuse me, I hesitate to use the word we because this part of we did not have anything to say and had no part in creating these long-term debt situations. But somebody's going to have to pay the piper. And I will tell you, Ed, when Frankfurt decides to force the population of Kentucky to pay for their boneheaded, short-sighted, fiscally irresponsible decisions over the last 2 decades, I'm telling you, there's going to be a bunch of people saying, sayonara. They're going to move to an adjacent state. And Indiana is a great alternative.
Oh, we're already seeing that. We really are. I mean, when you talk about, you know, sprawl and everything, I mean, you're seeing that. You're seeing a great exodus outside of Louisville, but you're also seeing a large part of the Louisvillians moving to southern Indiana, things like that. And when you look at the progress southern Indiana has made over the last 2 decades, I mean, let's look at what's going on there. Their infrastructure seems to be 10 times better than anything we've gotten here. Their opportunities are so much greater than what we have here. You know, and it's all by design. I mean, even our mayor, he doesn't own his business here in Louisville. His business is in southern Indiana. So to make it easier for him to get to work, I guess he decided we had to have an East End bridge. I don't know. But, you know, the reality is the Democratic leadership here, we have all kinds of predecessors, as you mentioned, that are showing us what road we're going out. And if I recall, Paul, back in 2006, you know, you and I, this is when we first got together on the MSD project, if you remember. And, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, Jefferson County, Alabama, if you will, you know, was on the verge of bankruptcy then, and we knew they were going to go bankrupt. And they did end up going bankrupt just a couple of years later. And then we both predicted then that Detroit was going to be the biggest one coming soon. They took a couple of years longer than I thought they would, but they still went the same direction. So if we can know all of this stuff, and, you know, we're not politically savvy guys, if you will. We're not in the inside, no. We don't make decisions and affect policy. You know, we're not elected leaders. But if we know that as citizens in our community, and we were able to dictate all this crap, you know, 8, 9 years ago, and watch this come to full fruition, why is it that the smartest and the best that we continue to elect can't figure that out themselves?
Well, I think your answer is contained in your question, and that is these are not the smartest and the best. They may
Thank
be
you.
The most devious, but they're not the smartest and the best. And they certainly are not operating in the common good in a way that everyone in the public has to operate their household budgets. So it's just insanity that these political types continue acting as if unlimited supply of money that they can go get. Greg Fisher is the latest iteration as the mayor of Louisville. And by the way, just make sure that your listeners understand that the legal boundaries of the city of Louisville today are identical to the legal boundaries of the city of Louisville before the government operations merged. There's been no change in the legal boundaries. And because of that, when there are federal programs that are destined for the city of Louisville, all those suburban locations out in the county, out in the unincorporated county, do not benefit $1 from those programs. Councilman James Peden fought that battle about 2 or 3 years ago during a Metro Council subcommittee meeting, and I'm telling you, we are still two distinct communities. The Urban Services Taxing District is the city of Louisville. It's the same city of Louisville that existed before the merged government. So if we out here in the county think that we got skewered by the merger, we continue to get skewered by this metro form of government. I think it's time that we revamp this metro form of government, because the only thing that those of us out here in the county got was less services and a higher cost of operating.
Yep. Agreed. And that's what people aren't really understanding. And, you know, truthfully, I think it is finally time to start really, for Jefferson County residents primarily, the unincorporated Jefferson County residents, I think it's finally time to recall murder. Get serious about this. Because it is time that we get recognized. I mean, we were better off, and it was really fascinating because I was debating Jerry Abramson on a stage at Mazeque Middle School on behalf of the NAACP back in 2006 mayoral election. And I was debating with Jerry and Kelly, and you know, one of the things that we had talked about was the financial benefit to incorporate a city of Louisville. The city of Louisville pre-merger was running in the red. They were hemorrhaging money. The unincorporated Jefferson County, we were paying our own people. You know, we were in the black. We were making money. You know, so they needed merger. And, you know, merger always failed when it was given to the county. It's when they included the city of voters that merger finally passed, because they expanded the vote after a couple of failures to include the incorporated city residents. So, and I think that was proven. Jerry tried to lie on stage and said I was wrong and it was completely backwards. They were saving the county until, of course, Kelly Downard and everybody else in attendance reminded him how full of crap he was. But, you know, that's the truth of what we deal with. So I think it's really time that we start looking at recalling merger and you know, and start making some kind of a deal there. You know, we talked about the smartest and the best. You know, it's comical sometimes when we think about the smartest and the best. Allison Lundigan Grimes, she's getting hammered on the polls. Every poll that I have seen in the last week or two has Mitch McConnell leading by 4 to 8 points, depending on which poll you want to listen to. Most of these you have to concede or what they consider credible polls. You know, the USA surveys and those kind of things have been around. People consider those credible polls. I personally don't think any poll is credible except my own, but that's just me. But when we look at this, they're getting beat up so bad on the polls. Allison Lundigan Grimes' staff today decided they had to put out something to combat the damage and to fight the fire because Allison Lundigan Grimes is getting beat so bad. So what does she do? Well, Allison Wonderland Grimes and her staff decide to release an internal poll, being the key word here, that says she is actually leading Mitch McConnell by 1 point, but they would not release any information about the poll or anything else. Doesn't that sound like Derby City polling right here in Louisville during the Doug Hawkins days? I mean, is this a joke or what?
Well, that is an inherent problem. When you are, first of all, that you don't set your polling up right, and then secondly, when you're basically polling the converted anyway. Remember, the Democrat religion requires the Democrat candidates to look like they're winning. Okay? That's part of the religion of being a Democrat.
Sure.
So
I just find it, I just found that, it's insulting to the intelligence of all of us. I mean, I just can't believe you've got to try something like that. That to me is a surest sign of desperation. You know, when all that was going on here in Louisville during the Doug Hawkins day and had Rachel Ford and everybody else helping him manipulate this crap and act like they were doing some kind of credible poll, all these things had Doug Hawkins just blowing David Yates right out of the water. I'm no fan of David Yates because I know who he really is, and it should disturb the hell out of everybody. But, you know, the reality is we knew it was a bogus poll. You know, and it was proven so at election time. Hawkins supposedly had double-digit leads and all of a sudden was just really concerned and couldn't understand how David Yates had beat him in the election. It was just unheard of that something like that could happen. And this is exactly what it sounds to me like with Allison Lundigan Grimes. It really truthfully is a desperation move. And I think, or at least I hope, that the voters will actually get to that. I just saw that and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, it's really amazing. And, you know, so that's something to look at. Another thing that her campaign is doing wrong, I really want to mention this too. This story came out. It's out at townhall.com. I'll actually put that in the chat room as well. You know, funnily enough, you know, Congress gets called back into session, Paul, right? So Mitch McConnell, okay, whether you like the guy, love the guy, or hate him, you know, his job is to be in Washington when they're in session representing the people. So Mitch McConnell goes back to work on Monday, returns to Washington, D.C., and Allison Lundigan Grimes blasted him for returning to work that we're paying him to do, you know, because McConnell should be talking to the people in Kentucky. You know, according to her, what they're putting out, McConnell is running back to Washington, D.C. in an attempt to dodge the tough questions he faces back home. Now, I'm sorry. I would love to meet her halfway, which we both know I'm lying about that. But, you know, how could you sit here and gripe about a guy who's not doing his job in Washington? And then when he's supposed to be in Washington, goes back to Washington to do his job, then you gripe because he's in Washington and not in Kentucky answering questions that he's campaigning for a job. It makes no sense. Here's the ironic thing about this. Of course, the headline on this says McConnell flees to D.C. to dodge tough questions back home. No, McConnell had to go back to work before he paid for it. But here's the ironic thing. Alice in Wonderland Grimes decided to slam McConnell for going back to do his job, except she left when he did. She's not staying in Kentucky answering tough questions. Hell, she's not staying in Kentucky and doing her job as Secretary of State. No, she went to D.C. to raise money. So the same time she's griping at Mitch McConnell for going back to work, she's following him to Washington, D.C. to go fundraise money for her campaign instead of answering the same tough questions back home that she refuses to answer anyway. That's not hypocritical at all, is it, Paul?
Well, I think it is. It demonstrates very clearly that the criticism about McConnell being a Washington insider, that Alice in Wonderland Grimes is demonstrating the very same type of behavior as that which she criticizes. So I like to call it a double standard. Hypocrite is perfectly fine with me as well. Again, she's not a savvy politician on the national stage. She got elected primarily because she ran a what I thought was a very good ad with her two grandmothers that was very memorable and very likable, I might add. But she also ran against an unbelievably weak Republican opponent. And I'm not a Republican and never have been, and I never will be for that matter. But the fact is that the Republicans here in Kentucky have great difficulty finding solid candidates. They really, really do. But there seems to be one on the horizon. And we'll get into that, I'm sure you'll talk about that a little bit later, like next year. Anyway, it's par for the course.
Well, I agree with you on that because they don't seem to be able to come up with candidates for every race that needs to be ran. And, you know, and let's face facts. The Secretary of State's job is basically, you know, a figurehead job anyway. I mean, Alice in Wonderland Grimes isn't even doing that job effectively. She's not in Frankfurt doing her job as Secretary of State. She's been doing nothing but campaigning for this seat since she was elected Secretary of State. She has nothing to offer the people at all. She has no clue of the issue. She has no clue of how to do her own job. And for those who think I'm lying about that as evidence, I will tell you this. At one point, I have not checked today to see if she has changed or not, but at one point she hadn't even filed her own business filing for her own personal business with her own office as Secretary of State. So if you can't do your job, you don't know how to do your job. You know, to sit here and play this game with Mitch McConnell, to me, is about asinine. It's the stupidest thing she could ever do. Alice in Wonderland Grimes was only put up because Ashley Judd was found out to be a nut job that we all thought she was anyway, and Alice in Wonderland Grimes is the next female that the Democrats want to put up because they want to act like they care about females and women voters. That's it. There are plenty of people out there with the credentials that are female to run against Mitch McConnell in the Democratic Party. But they had to go with somebody like Grimes, the same reason that they had to go with Judd. They wanted somebody that could appeal to women voters. Ashley Judd, pretty woman, turned out to be crazy. Alice in Wonderland Grimes, like you said, she did a great ad campaign and could relate to people on a personal level because her two grandmas were there. You know, they wanted that visual appeal. I'm tired of the visual appeal. I want the substance. Crit Llewellyn should have been and could have been a very good candidate for that job.
Yeah,
yes, she wanted it.
I am so disappointed that particular Democrat female didn't run. Crit Llewellyn brings to the table unbelievably large amounts of experience and, more importantly, wisdom. Crit was absolutely the best choice for whatever race that she would have entered. But she opted out, and I was greatly, greatly disappointed. She brings to the table what Frankfort needs in large doses, and that is common sense.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally. And then that is really truthfully the problem, because when you have people of a Crit Llewellyn caliber, you know, you're still appealing to female voters, but you're not appealing to female voters. You know, I kind of call it the blonde complex. You know, for years and years and years, we've always used those dumb blonde jokes, all right? And don't be offended by me because I'm a man telling you I've used dumb blonde jokes. Get over your politically correct self, all right? But the reality is there are a ton of women out there. So why would you put the proverbial dumb blonde like Alice in Wonderland Grimes or Ashley Judd up for a job that they're clearly not capable of and such an important role as a U.S. senator, instead of picking the best that you have to offer? That's what puzzles me.
Well, I got an answer for that.
The only reason
I got an answer for that.
I'm waiting for it, but I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
The answer for that is that the two parties in Kentucky, the Democrats and the Republicans, have got Kentucky election laws and Kentucky statutes written in such a way that it is makes it almost impossible for good candidates to step forward without kissing the butt of the party. Because neither of these two parties in Kentucky, because of the way the laws are written and because of the way elections are held, neither of these two parties are going to let any independent-minded partisan threaten their current hold on whatever power they have or they think they have. That's
right.
Why you have to declare, for example, from a voter point of view, you're not eligible to vote in the primary unless you're registered on by the end of December the prior year. Well, that's insane. I mean, if you're an established voter, an existing voter, you have to make your party change before the new year rolls around. Ironically, if you're a brand-new voter, you don't have to do that. If you're an 18-year-old just eligible to vote for the first time and you turn 18 in March, you can register and you'll be eligible to vote in the primary. So Kentucky's got some election law overhaul that's badly, badly needed, and we've got to find a way to get rid of this undue amount of influence that the two parties currently have. Okay.
Well,
we both know
a way to do that. We both know the biggest way to do that.
Well,
open up the election process.
See, Alison Grimes, when I quizzed her during her Secretary of State campaign, all right, I quizzed her specifically about making changes to Kentucky election law to allow independents like me to vote in the primary, which, by the way, over in Indiana, remember Indiana? We were just talking about Indiana. But all the people over in Indiana can go to the polls in the spring, and they can decide which ballot they want to vote on. They can say, I want to vote on the Democrat ballot or I want to vote on the Republican ballot. They're not locked in. But in Kentucky, an independent like me is locked out. And there are more than 200,000 Kentuckians that are not Democrat and not Republican that the Kentucky Secretary of State's office, through and because of Alison Grimes, they do not want us participating in the primary. So toward that end, I've proposed another thing, and I'd love to see this happen. If the two parties want to control their primary, fine, knock yourself out. If you don't want Democrats voting in your primary, Republicans and Democrats, if you don't want Republicans voting in your primary, then let's do this. Make it a closed primary, only open to partisans, but here's the big but. Pay for it yourself. Don't use tax money for it. Because I have to pay taxes, and I'm being shut out by a partisan system promulgated by the legislators in Frankfort. They are okay with shutting Kentuckians out of the primary process. But yet, they want everybody to pay for it.
And that is something that we have been talking about forever on this show. We're 100% in agreement with you. I am. That's the thing. I mean, you have this two-party stranglehold. They've made all the rules beneficial to themselves. So you get to choose between, dumb or dumber in most cases. We don't have free elections in Kentucky. If we did, independents would be included. And I would venture to say this. We have 200,000 people that are undeclared Republican or Democrat. So by our rules here, they're declared as other. So that's independent, Green Party, whatever. Whatever label they want to put on themselves. But you know what? I truthfully believe that you probably have five times that amount of people throughout Kentucky who are independent or other-minded, and that's why a lot of those people don't vote, because they don't like the dumb and dumber either. If we want to increase the voting percentage, we want to get people to get a reason to go vote, then we need to open up the process so we get a better selection of candidates.
That's the size of it. Nationally, the independent voting organization that tracks this stuff nationwide, when they do their polls time and time and time again, when they ask the people, the voters, how they identify themselves, doesn't matter what they're registered in their state, but 40% of the electorate in the United States identifies themselves as independent. 40%. So going back to what you just said, if the election process in Kentucky were changed, I will promise you that there will be a defection from both the registered Republican roll and the registered Democrat role. I promise you there will be a defection. Now, will it be huge? It's hard to say. But I will tell you this, the 40% nationally will begin to take shape in Kentucky, such that 40% of the Kentuckians will ultimately end up becoming independents on the voter rolls, and that leaves the Democrats and the Republicans duking it out for their share, whatever it happens to be. But the 40% will determine winners, not the 30%, but assuming that the 60 gets split. The partisan voters won't decide elections anymore in Kentucky. And that's why the two parties don't want to revise or change the status quo. They know this, Ed. They know this. They're scared to death of it.
There's no doubt.
And Grimes has been she's been at the epicenter as the Secretary of State's office, which is responsible for all the voter rolls and the voting in Kentucky. She is responsible for this.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And don't forget, she's been politically connected since the day she was born. I mean, her dad is Jerry Lundigan Grimes. We all know about his ill fortunes, if you will, from back in the 80s. And that's the whole
Jerry
thing.
Lundigan.
We've got to, Jerry Lundigan, right. And that's the whole thing. I said Jerry Lundigan Grimes, didn't I? That's because I don't distinguish between the two. I'm a crook is a crook is a crook. It's a family thing. That's the way I look at it. And, we have to get changes in the electorate. We have to get changes in the electoral process. That's the only way we're going to get ahead. But in the meantime, you're going to have people like me out there screaming and yelling, trying to make it better. And hopefully we'll get enough people to finally wake up. Paul, I'm running out of time, man. I'm going to give you an opportunity for final thoughts.
Well, since we kind of touched on election law reform in Kentucky, I will just close out with that. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can begin the process of changing Kentucky's election laws is simply go and get a voter registration form and change from your Democrat or Republican status and move it over to no party preference. And then as the parties begin to see that that their political partisanship is beginning to shrink, while at the same time we need to start telling them we want the laws changed to allow no party preference or independence to participate more fully in the process. And in addition to that, another benefit that will happen is that it will be the independents that will be determining the outcomes of elections, not the straight party voting crap that seems to the existing parties in power, depending on the part of the state, because, some parts of Kentucky is heavy Republican control, other parts of Kentucky heavy Democrat control. But we need to wrest control. We, the people, need to take our country, and in this particular case, our state, back. We need to take it back.
I can't argue with that. I agree with that. I tell you, folks, it's really become disturbing how much we have been willing to give up. And we look more and more each and every day there's something else that is putting us at a distinct disadvantage. You know, we wonder why Kentucky can't get ahead. We wonder why, you know, right here in Louisville we can't get ahead. You know, and we wonder why everybody else seems to be thriving. It's because, you know, Mark Twain said, you know, at one time, he said when he dies, he wants to die in Kentucky because Kentucky is like 20 or 30 years behind the rest of the world. And I think we're proving that more and more every day. I think we've actually lost more ground than that. Interestingly enough, you know, we are seeing some things that are going to get greatly better in the very near future. I'll be making a couple of announcements over the next week or two, and you'll understand more then. I'm not at liberty to discuss it publicly yet. But, you know, we are making strides. We are going to move forward. But it's time, like Paul said, to take Kentucky back. It really is. We cannot continue to falter and grovel at the feet, as we have for decades now, to the liberal agenda and liberal establishment. You know, that's it for me. That's it tonight. I mean, I just don't know any other way to put that right now. Tomorrow night, I will be back here at 7 o'clock. Hopefully my voice will sound better. I apologize. I got one of those late summer colds again. You know, and tomorrow night we're going to talk about a lot of things, but we're going to start off a little bit. I want to talk about Jamie Comer tomorrow night. He made his announcement today for governor, and I'll be honest with you, I've got some concerns. And I tell you, some of the things that he said when he made his announcement started making me wonder if he's pandering to the liberal agenda or, you know, if he truly believes what he's saying. There was just something not quite right about a couple of statements. And I'll mention those to you tomorrow night. We'll spend some time on it. That's it for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow at 7. Take care, folks. Have a great night. God bless.